Welcome to Live Daf, your online Daf Yomi Shir.
Shalom Aleichem, welcome back to today's Daf Yomi, which is Shabbos Daf Kuf Chaf Ches. We're on the top of the Omer at the first line. Begins the Gemara, Avaloi es ha-tevel. The Mishnah told us, one may not move tevel on Shabbos. Tevel is something which the Truma Maisa was not yet separated from. And it's inedible, it's asa to be eaten. It's mukta. Pshita, says the Gemara, isn't that obvious? Of course it's mukta, why would I think otherwise? Loi tzricha, apparently we're speaking about betevel, which is only tevel midrabanan. It only has the status of tevel midrabanan. Kigoyin shezorei ba'otit she'eni nakut. For instance, when it was planted in a flower pot, which didn't have a hole, was eini naka, was unperforated. So, in which case, it wasn't connected to the ground, it wasn't nurturing from the ground. And min ha-Torah, any produce that grows in this type of a flower pot is not obligated into Mr. Meiser, it's only a chiv d'rabbanan. So it's a tevel d'rabbanan. The Mishnah is here informing us that although it's only Isma d'rabbanan, it's considered to be mukta. Perhaps I would think, some of Farshim say that Issa d'rabbanan is only an obligation on the person. It's only a prohibition which is chal, which is sitting on the person. It's not. It doesn't affect the actual object itself. So this tevel, which is only asim d'rabbanan, the person can't eat it, but the object itself is inherently fine and edible min ha-Torah. So there's nothing wrong with the actual object itself. Perhaps it would not be considered mukta. Mishnah tells us, yes, even this type of tevel is regarded as muktzah, it cannot be moved on Shabbos. Continues the Gemara, v'loi maserishayin, the Mishnah said, nor can we move maserishayin, shaloi nitla trumasai, whose truma was not separated from it. So it's inedible. Pshita, of course, why would I think otherwise? Let's take a look at Rashi here, the top line on Rashi, shaloi nitla trumasai, kasalka daitach. The Gemara at this point figures, we're speaking about the maserishon shaloi nitla trumas maser shaloi, that the trumas maser was not separated from the maserishon. Now, once again, we know that when we have a kri, which is a pile of grain, it is chayiv and all the trumas are maserus. And the way to do it is you take off the truma gedola, give it to the kohen, then you take off the maserishon, which is a tenth of what's remaining, give it to the levi. The levi takes that portion and from it he removes a tenth and gives it to the kohen. That's trumas maser. So more at this point figures that the Mishnah, which says you can't move maserishin shalainit trumas, is speaking about the portion given to the levi, the maserishin, whose truma was not separated. The levi had not separated the truma of that maser given to the kohen. Then of course it's us, it's prohibited. Pshita, then obviously it's muktzah, it's inedible. Says Malay Tzricha, apparently we're speaking about a unique case. Shegdimoi Bikri. What happened was that the Yisrael, instead of beginning the system of Trumas and Maishas by giving the Truma Gedola to the Kohen first, he bypassed the Kohen and he took a portion and gave it first to the Levi. So he gave the Maserishin to the Levi, and the Levi did his job. He took his Maserishin and separated a tenth for the Kohen. So we have the Yisrael who is Zigdimoi Bekri, so he preceded, he advanced, and he first took off the Maserishin from the Kri prior to separating the Truma Gedola to the Kohen. Shenitu Memeno Maser, so this Maserishin was had the Trumas Maser was Nital Memeno, was separated from that Maserishin. So Maser here means a tenth of that Maserishin the Levi separated and gave it to the Kohen. V'loi nitlu mimeno truma gedola. However, truma gedola was never separated from it because the Levi got his portion prior to the truma gedola having been separated from the Kri. So this maserishon was addressed as far as the truma's maser. The Levi fulfilled his obligation. He took a tenth and gave it to the Kohen. But there was never truma gedola which was removed from this produce. Perhaps I would think it's mutter. Mal the time, perhaps I was thinking the armor of Papa Abai, as we learned yesterday, Papa challenged Abai. He said, well, when the Pasuk exempts the portion of the Levi from the obligation of Truma Gedola, perhaps we're speaking about even this case where the owner separated the Maserishin after the grain has already attained its Dogon status, its grain status, and had a Chiyuv of Truma Gedola. Perhaps even then, if the Levi took his portion, perhaps it's exempt from Truma Gedola. Kamash Malon. The Mishnah teaches us no. Kedushani le'abaye. Just as Abai responded to Rapapa and he told him no. We have that pasuk which tells us that even the portion of the Levi is chayiv in Truma Gedolah. And apparently he's speaking about this type of case where the Levi accepted his portion of Maaser Rishon after the grain has already attained its grain status and was already obligated, was already mechuyev in the obligation of Truma Gedolah. In this case, the Maaser Rishon is chayiv, is obligated in Truma Gedolah as well. The Levi must separate two things. The standard Trumas Maaser, in addition to the Truma Gedolah, which was never separated from this grain. So the Mishnah here is telling us that the Maaser Rishon Shalin Lita Trumasai, which means the portion of the Levi whose Truma Gedolah was not separated from, that is considered to be Mukta, it's useless, it's inedible, it's Asur, and therefore you can't move it. Continues the Gemara of Elois, Maaser Sheni. Mishnah said, nor can he move Maaser Sheni or Hegdish, Shiloi Niftu, which were not yet redeemed. Pshita, isn't that obvious? It's inedible, it's Asur to be eaten. Loi Tzricha, we must be speaking about the Niftu, they were redeemed. Loi Niftu kill Chasa, but not properly. For instance, Maaser, this is the Maaser Sheni, which he attempted to redeem, but he did it incorrectly. Shepedoy al gabe simoin. He redeemed it, he transferred the Kedusha onto a simoin, onto an unminted slug. The Pasuk says, v'tzarta kesev yodecha. He meant to use money, v'tzarta. We learn from here, dovah sheyesh boitzura. Money which has a form, which has something engraved into it, it's minted. Has its tzura. So something which has no tzura is unfit. So you use that type of coin, an unminted slug, it's not suitable and it doesn't work. Hegdish, when the Mishnah speaks about Hegdish Leinifta, it doesn't mean he didn't attempt to transfer the Kedusha, but he did it incorrectly. Shechilla gabei karka, he transferred the Kedusha on top of karka, on top of land, Rachmana Omar. V'nosan ha-kesa v'komlai, he must provide the money for the chilal to work. He can't do it on karkas. And Mishnah is speaking about such cases that the Maser and the Hegdish were redeemed incorrectly, improperly, and therefore it doesn't work, and it's asur ba'achil. Continues the Gemara of Leis Haluf, the Mishnah told us, nor can he transfer the luf, these beans, Tana Rabbanan, we learned in the Brice. Now the concept in the Brice is going to be that any type of material which is suitable for animal feed, animals which are generally raised by people, so any type of feed which is suitable for those animals is not considered to be mukta on Shabbos. And if it's something which is a unique animal, but he personally happens to be raising that animal, that's also okay. The food which is stands to be fed to that animal is not mukta. Continues the Gemara. Tana Rabbanan, we learned in the Braisa, metaltlin es hachatzav epnei shumacha letzvoyim. Won't give me metaltal the chatzav, which is a certain type of grass. Rashi says it grows straight down, the roots go straight down. Actually, Yeshua used that to set the borders of Eretz Yisrael. It's a very very suitable type of thing to use because it goes straight down. It doesn't take the nutrients from either side. So it's a perfect boundary. So this type of grass can be moved on Shabbos. It's not mukta because it is fed to animals. Meshu machal etzvayim, it's fed to deer. Besachardol, one can move mustard, meshu machal yoinim, because it's fed to pigeons. Now, if you recall now Mishnah, we had chardol, which was actually mukta. So the Farshim explain that it seems to be dependent on the locale. The town of the Mishnah was discussing an area where they didn't generally raise pigeons, whereas the Brice is discussing a place where raising pigeons was something acceptable and common, therefore the chardal, which is used to feed the pigeons, is not mukta. Rav Shimon Gamliel Omer, a chiddush, af metaltlin shivei schuchis. One can even move broken pieces of glass. Why? Ipneshu machal anamiyos, because it is feed for ostriches, which is something which the typical person doesn't raise. It's something which is raised by princes, wealthy people. Nevertheless, Rav Shimon Gamliel holds, Kol Yisroel b'nei melachim heim. All of Yisroel are regarded as classified as princes. And something which is suitable for a prince to raise, we consider every yid, we consider it to be appropriate for every yid. Kol Yisroel, all Yisroel have that same class, the same status. We don't differentiate between groups of people. Just as, if you remember, he said in the Mishnah that one can be metaltal this loof because it's machal urban, it's food for ravens. And that's also something which only unique exotic people do, raise. So apparently he holds that Kol Yisrael B'nai Malachim, we lump together, we classify all Yisrael as one, something which is considered to be appropriate conduct for princes and wealthy people, will apply to all of Yisrael as well. So again, these broken glass pieces are not muktzah because it is fed to the ostriches. Amalei Rabbi Nosson, Elamiata, if so, Chavila Zmoiris, Yitaltalu. What about bundles of vine branches? That as well can be moved in Pneishu Machala Pilin because it's feed for elephants, which is also something generally raised only by princes and wealthy people. So why do you specify only broken glass? What about Zmoiris? Says the Gemara, Reb Shimon Gamliel, he holds Ne'ami Yishchichi. Ostriches are common, are commonly raised, at least by wealthy people, by princes, royal families. However, pilin, elephants, that's not something which even they would raise. Lo Yishchichi, that's not common. So there's a very small machlekes here. In principle, they both agree that something which is raised even by princes is considered to be appropriate for the ordinary yid. The question is, practical question, whether elephants fall into that category. Omer HaMeimer, V'hud Islei Namiyos. This allowance to move around the broken glass on account of the ostriches, that's only if he personally happens to be raising ostriches. Omer HaVashi LaMeimer, Ela Duka Amalei Rav Nosson. Now, if you say that this is a requirement, he personally has to have this this animal in his possession. If so, Ela Dika Amarle, Rav Nosson Rav Shimon Gamliel. How are you going to explain what Rav Nosson challenged? Right, he challenged Shimon Gamliel and he said, Chavilis Moirois, bundles of vines. He taltel, will he will be able to move a Pneishu Machal Pilin, because it is a feed for elephants. Right, that was his question. Why do you limited to glass, why not vines? Now, according to you, according to Amemar, that you require that he actually have the animal in his possession to allow the moving of this animal feed. If that's the case, he islay pil na my loy. So the discussion here is when the animal is in his possession. So what's the question regarding elephants? If he has pilin, he islay pilin na my loy, why would he not be able to carry those vines? Meaning, what's the point of a contention here? It is a discussion between Rabbi Shimon Gamliel and Rabbi Nosson whether or not elephant feed is muktzah. Well, if he actually has that creature in his possession, and certainly there's no contest, there's no discussion here. Of course it's not muktzah. It's designated to feed his animal. Elo ro'i. Apparently we're not speaking about a case where this animal is actually in his possession, he's actually raising it. Rather, Rabbi Shimon Gamliel was telling us a chiddush. Ro'i. That, oh no, although personally, he's not raising it, but he's roy to raise it. Something which is raised by royalty, by wealthy people, is considered to be appropriate conduct, even for your ordinary person, for your ordinary Yisrael. It's roy for him to raise this animal, therefore, the food, which is generally fed to this animal, is considered to be designated for this animal, it's not muktzah. Hachinami roy. Here as well, when we speak about the ostriches, we don't actually need it to be there present. We don't need him to actually be raising the namiyos. Rather, as long as he's a Yisrael and Kol Yisrael b'nei Malachim, he is roy to raise it and it's not muktzah. So Rav Ashi, he disputed on Meimar's contention. You require the animal to actually be present? I agree with you. If an animal is present, then there's no discussion. And the animal, which a person is actually raising, the food which is designated to be fed for that animal wouldn't be muktzah. Very practical consideration. It's designated for that animal. The point of Reb Nosson was, he meant to add even those elephants, which he does not have in his possession. It's roi. Since he's a Yisrael, it's roi for him to have it, because Kol Yisrael b'nei Malachim. Ela roi. Hachinami roi. Likewise, when it comes to the ostriches, Reb Shimon Gamliel just meant to say that he's roi to raise it, but he doesn't actually have to have it in his possession. Continues more, Omar Abayi. We had this concept of Kol Yisrael B'nei Malachim Heim. all of Yisrael are regarded, classified as sons of royalty, and are granted the privileges of royal families when it comes to halachis. Amar Abaye, I'll give you a list, we find this many times in Gemara, where Abaye gives us a list of similar shittis, which all have a common denominator. Says Abaye, I'll give you a list of Manda Amrim, who subscribe to this concept. Rabshim Gamliel, Rab Shimon, Rabbi Shmuel, Rabbi Kiva, Kulu Svirlu, they all subscribe to the concept of Kol Yisrael B'nei Melachim Heim. Rabshim Gamliel, Hodamar, what we just said, with regard to the ostriches, and with regard to the ravens in the Mishnah. Rab Shimon, what do we find there? Desnan B'nei Melachim, we learned in the Mishnah earlier in Masechel Shabbos, regarding Refuah, that one cannot engage in practices of remedy, of medicine, for minor illnesses, for concern that he might go ahead and prepare those ingredients and do the melacha of toich. Now, this prohibition, this iser, is strictly limited to a case where he's obviously engaging in refuah. It's something which is nikar, but something which is being done even for medical purposes, but it's not obvious, it's not nikar, that it is so, it is mutter. So the Mishnah told us, B'nei Melachim, Sochen al Gabi Mekaseim, so these princes may smear on their wounds, Shemen Veret, even this expensive, exotic oil, this rose oil, they can use it. Why? Shekein Darkav Sh'B'nei Melachim, Lasa B'chayil, because it is the practice for these B'nei Melachim to commonly apply this oil, even during an ordinary weekday when there's no wound present, something which they do as a common practice. So it's not obviously being done for a four, therefore it's mutter even if they do it for the four's sake. So this is Tanakama. Rab Shimon Omer, Kol Yisrael B'nei Melachim. All of Yisrael have the category of B'nei Melachim, and therefore they as well can use the rose oil even to place on a wound, Kol Yisrael B'nei Melachim. Rabbi Shmuel, Rabbi Kiva, where do we find that they subscribe to this concept? The Sanya, Hareisha Yenoishim by Elef Mana. There's a fellow who owes 1,000 mana, V'lobish Itzla Baskuf mana, and he's wearing this elegant garment worth 100 mana, something beyond extraordinary, beyond the average acceptable standards. Now we know that we don't take away a person's basic needs, basic sustenance, even if he's a Baal Chayv and he owes lots of money. We leave him with his basics. Now his clothing certainly constitutes as his basics. So the question here is, if he's wearing this elegant garment, can we go ahead and tell him, well, listen, Ravid, you don't need such an elegant piece of material. We'll give you something standard, and we'll sell this one, and use the rest to pay back your debt. So the Tanakama holds, yes, mafshit and oisai, we remove this garment, and we exchange it, we give him to wear something which is appropriate for him, something standard, something average. Tana Mishum Rabbi Shmuel, Vitana Mishum Rabbi Akiva, they hold, no. You can't take this elegant garment, Kol Yisrael Ru'uyin Lo'isa Itzla, all of Yisrael are suitable for this elegant garment, you have no right to take it away, he's a son of Hashem, B'nai Malachim, you must leave it, this is considered to be his basic necessities, basic needs, and you must leave it intact. So in summary, we learned about the heter to be metaltal, animal feed. Now, if he personally has this exotic animal in his possession, certainly he can be metaltal the food which is designated for this animal. Likewise, if it is a derech to raise these animals, for instance, the deer or the yoinim, one can go ahead and be metaltal the feed which is suitable for these animals. What about if it's only derech of B'nai Melachim to raise these animals? For instance, the ostriches, the ravens, according to Tanakam, it's asa. According to Shimon Gamliel, it's mutar, because Kol Yisrael B'nai Melachim. Rav Nosson adds that it was even common practice for the B'nai Melachim to raise elephants. So elephant feed is mutar as well. Continues the Gemara. Chavilei kash v'chavilei v'chulu. Tanu Rabbanan. Chavilei kash, bundles of straw, v'chavilei etzim, bundles of wood, v'chavilei zrodim, bundles of these reeds. So these things can be used either as firewood or as animal feed. And that will determine its muksa status. Im eskinon lamachal behema, if he designated it for animal feed, metalten oisam, when we move them. But otherwise, in which case they are meant to be used as firewood, they're considered to be useless. They're muktzei matalton oisim. One cannot move them. Rav Shimon Gamliel Omer, even when it's designated as animal feed, it depends on the size. Chavilin packages on itolim yad achat. So bundles which can be carried using merely one hand, small light bundles, mutal taton. One may carry on Shabbos. B'shtei yadayim, if they're large and heavy, and two hands are required to move them, usul taton. In which case, they can't be moved because of tircha. So although it's not mukta, but it's considered to be excessive exertion, and that's not mutar on Shabbos. Continues the b'raisa chavilei siya, ezoi v'kurnis, all these types of plants, bundles of these plants. So again, it depends on the designation. Hichnisan le'etzim, if he gathered them for the sake of firewood, ein mistafik b'hemem b'shabbos, he cannot use them on Shabbos. L'macha b'hema, but if it's for animal feed, mistafik b'hemem b'shabbos, he may use them on Shabbos. The b'raisa continues, v'koitim b'yad b'oichel, he can chop them into small pieces, using his hands, and eat. U'v'vash le'yiktem b'kli, provided that he doesn't chop it using a kli, in which case it would involve a malacha of toichen, of grinding. U'moylel v'oichel. Now what if he wants to remove the seeds from the pod? So you can roll, you can rub these plants. V'oichel and eat. U'v'vash le'yumlel b'kli harbi, provided that he doesn't use a utensil, a kli. Now the word harbe, some actually take out the word harbe. The point of Kohen Yehuda is they cannot use a kli, because if one would use a kli, that would be connected with the malacha of mefarik, of dash, extraction, something from its the extraction of something from its encasement, as disha does, it takes the grain out of its husk. So here as well, these seeds coming out of these stalks of these pods. So the only way he could do it is derech shini, if he does it differently than during the week. He uses his hands, he does it manually, and he eats it in that manner, in which case it is mutter. Divrei Rabbi Yehuda. V'chacham Aymer, they apply different guidelines for allowance here. Moylel brush, it's ba'isav. He can rub, he can roll using the tips of his, heads of his fingers, meaning not using your palms. He can use the brush, it's ba'isav, on top of his fingers, va'ichlan eat, uvash le'yum l'biyadoi harbe, provided that he doesn't use his hands and rubs it in that manner. And likewise, he can't do a lot, meaning there are two conditions according to Rabbanan. Number one, du b'rosh eitz b'oisav. Number two, only a small amount at once, in which case it's different. It doesn't, it's not reminiscent of the ordinary malacha, like they say, keder sh'oisav b'choil, meaning don't do b'yadoi harbe, keder sh'oisav b'choil, the way which would resemble the way he does it during the week. So it's done differently. In this case, it's considered to be, some of Farshim say, it's like derech achila, he's merely preparing his personal food here. It's not considered to be processing the produce here, and it's not a malach. V'chein ba'amita, the same concepts apply to this plant called amita, which the Gemara is going to say is actually mint. V'chein b'fega, v'chein b'shar min etavlim, same thing regarding other types of spices. My amita, what is that? Ninya, Rashi says it's mintai, which is mint. What is siya of Rabbi Yehuda Tzasri? What is ezoiv? Avrasa. What is kurnis? Kurnisa shema. That's it's called kurnisa. Says the Gemara, v'ha hahuda amarlu. How could you say that kurnis is kurnisa? There was a story with this fellow called out, v'ha ahu, there was this fellow, the Amarlu, who called out to them, man boy kurnisa, who would like kurnis? V'yishtaka chashi, and they found him in possession of chashi. So you see that kurnis is actually chashi, and not kurnisa. Ella, says the Gemara, siya is tzitzri, like we said before, ezev is eversa, and kurnis is actually chashi, like we have in the story. Continues the Gemara, it's what we learned. Basar maliach, salted meat, so we have fresh raw meat, meat of a behema or a chaya, which is raw, but it is maliach, it is salted. In which case, a person can, out of necessity, b'shasat chak, eat this meat. So it's considered to be technically edible, and therefore mutal tafel b'shabbos, one may move it on Shabbos. What about basar tafel? Tafel means it's bland, unsalted. So you have fresh raw meat, unsalted meat. So it's not really edible in its current form. And certainly one can cook it on Shabbos. So it's basically useless. Now, although one can technically feed it to a chaya, but it's not designated for that purpose. It's not prepared for that because something which is fit for human consumption, which is designated to be eaten by the Adam, is generally not prepared for the animal. So it's not mukhan for the animal. The question here is whether something which is einoy mukhan is considered muktzah. So Rav Machlekes, Rav Huna Amar, mutar l'tatle, one may go ahead and move it on Shabbos. Rav Chisda Amar, also l'tatle, one may not. Says the Gemara, Rav Huna Amar, mutar l'tatle, you may move it on Shabbos. Because since technically it's suitable, although not for the Adam, but it's suitable for the animal, although it's not prepared for that purpose, it's not mukhan for that, it's not designated for that, because something which is suitable for him, he's not going to give to his animal. So it's not mukhan for that. Nevertheless, Rav Huna holds, one may move it on Shabbos, it's not considered to be muktz. Says the Gemara, well, this really depends on the question. On the machlekes between Rav Yehuda, who subscribes to the broad application of muktzah, we had this several times, he holds that in order for something to be mutar on Shabbos, it needs to be mukhan for Shabbos, it needs to be prepared. We learn this from the pasuk of Ve'ichine Asher Shoyaviyu, by the man, they're meant to prepare before Shabbos, so something needs to be prepared for Shabbos use in order to allow its use on Shabbos. So although we're not speaking about something which is useless, it's a piece of meat that can be fed to an animal, but it's not prepared for this purpose. So according to Abu, it's muktzah, whereas according to Rav Shimon, it's not muktzah unless it's inherently useless, unless it's negated due to the actual nature of the thing itself, but something which merely lacks preparedness is not considered muktzah. Likewise, with this piece of meat, it's suitable to be fed to an animal. So although not prepared for that purpose, it's not muktzah, according to Rav Shimon. So let's get back to our Gemara. Rav Chisda said it's aser, Rav Huna said it's mutar. And apparently Rav Chisda follows Rav Yehuda's opinion. He considers this to be muktzah because it's not prepared. Whereas Rav Huna seems to be going with Rav Shimon. Says the Gemara, how's that? V'Rav Huna, Talmud of Rav. Rav Huna was a Talmud of Rav. What does Rav hold? V'Rav Rav Yehuda's freely. The Islam muktzah, we know that Rav subscribes to Rav Yehuda's opinion regarding muktzah. So how does Rav Huna allow the moving of this meat? Says the Gemara, the muktzah l'achila, pertaining to eating, when muktzah pertains to the ability, the discussion of achila, sovla kribya. In that context, Rav Huna indeed holds like Rav Yehuda that unless it's been prepared, it cannot be eaten on Shabbos. However, when it comes to merely moving it, the muktzah l'taltal, in the context of moving something, sovla kribya shimin, in that case, he subscribes to Rav Shimon's view in muktzah, and simply due to the lack of preparedness, it's not considered to be muktzah. The first to explain the reason for this distinction is because the requirement for hachana pertaining to eating allowance is based on the pasuk of Ve'yichinu Asher Yaviyu by the man. So it's based on a pasuk. Therefore, it's considered to be more stringent. And therefore, Rav Huna, when it comes to eating, he follows Rabbi Yehuda Shita in Muktzah, as opposed to the Issa Tiltal, which is the Rabbanon for concern that he might actually carry out Nishas Haravim, etc. It's not based on a Pasuk. Therefore, he regards it more leniently, and therefore he allows moving this piece of meat, although it's unprepared for Shabbos use. Continues the Gemara. Rav Chisda Amar Asa. So Rav Chisda was the one who said, it's muktzah, since it's unprepared, it can't even move it. Rav Chisda amar shelo tatle. Says the Gemara, how does that work? For Rabbi Yitzchak bar Ami. There was a story that Rabbi Yitzchak bar Ami ikla libei Rav Chisda, he visited the home of Rav Chisda, v'chaza, and he noticed, ha'hu bar avza, this duck, davo kometatle, that they were moving it, mishim shelo tula, out of the sun, into shade. This was a fresh duck, a raw duck. And why did they do it? They were prompted actually by Rav Chisda, by his comment. Because he had said, V'am Rav Chisda, Chisorin Kischa Chazin Anhacha. When he noticed the duck sitting in the sun, he said, I see Chisorin Kis, I see loss of value here, meaning I see a hefsed coming. duck is going to spoil in the sunlight. So that prompted them to relocate it. Apparently, Rav Chisda holds one may move a raw piece of meat on Shabbos. Says the Gemara, Shani Bar Avza. A duck is different. The Chazil Umtza, because it is suitable to be eaten as is. The meat is soft and tender. And therefore, even when it's raw, when it's uncooked, it's still considered to be royal achila, shasat chak, out of necessity one would eat it. Therefore, it's considered to be prepared and designated, even for human consumption, and is not mukta, as opposed to animal meat, mehema v'chaya, that is not really edible for a human, and therefore is considered to be mukta on Shabbos. Tanu Rabbanan, dog maliach. What about fresh fish, but it is salted fish? You have a salted herring, for instance. It's perfectly edible. Mutal tatle, one may move it. Dog tafel, a bland piece of raw fish, unsalted, also tatle, one may not move it on Shabbos. As Rashi points out, that even according to the shita that allows moving the fresh meat earlier, on account of its suitability for animals, a dog tafel is different because that, Rashi says, is not roi for dogs. They wouldn't eat it. Basar, what about raw meat? Bein tafel, whether it's bland, meaning unsalted, bein maliach, whether salted, mutal tatle, one may move it. And apparently we're following the shita of Rav Shimon, who does not subscribe to mukta in this case, since technically it can be fed to the animals. It's not mukta. Tana Rabbanan. Metals on sad tzombeis, when we move bones. Vipnei shumach ala klovim, because it is fed to dogs. And it's considered to be mukhan for them. Basa tefuach. What about spoiled meat? That can be moved as well. Vipnei shumach ala chaya, because it is fed to the chaya. Mayim megulim, what about water which was left uncovered, in which case a person may not drink from it, for concern that perhaps a snake arrived and deposited his venom. So can one move that water on Shabbos? Says more, yeah, mipnei shehin ru'in l'chatzol, because it's suitable for a cat. Let's take a look at Rashi. The top line here, basas afuach, means masriach, spoiled meat, l'chatzol for a cat, l'imazik le'eres tanochash. The venom of a snake does not harm him. Sha'af ha'nachoshim y'chilis, because a cat will even eat the snake itself. Continues the Gemara, Rav Shimon Gamliel Omer, kol atzman osola shoysan, the entire thing itself, meaning this water which was left uncovered, one may not leave it around on account of danger. Perhaps somebody will come along and drink from this water. So in summary, we learned about basar of a behema, of a chaya, if it's salted and technically can be eaten by a adam, it is not mukta and is mutta to move on Shabbos. What about raw meat, which is unsalted? According to Rav Huna, although one may not eat it on Shabbos, but one may go ahead and move it on Shabbos. According to Rav Chisda, one may not even move it because it's mukta. What about spoiled meat? All agree that it's mutta because that is designated to be fed to the animals. What about raw duck meat? Even if it's tafel, meaning bland, unsalted, it's mutta to be moved because, technically speaking, one can eat it out of necessity, b'shas hadchak. What about fish? So it depends. If it's salted, certainly it's fully edible and it's not mukta. If it's unsalted, then it's asr, according to all shittas, because this is, it's not useful for any purpose. He can't even feed it to his dogs. What about bones? Bones are not mukta because that is fed to the dogs. And finally, we had these mayim megulim. That's not mukta as well because the cat would drink it. Continues the Mishnah. Koyfin es asal. One may invert, overturn a sali basket of nei afreichim in front of the chicks, kadei sheyalu v'yerdu, so that they can go up and down to their coop, to and from their coop using this basket. So what's the chiddush? Rashi points out, although he's being metatel a kli for the sake of the afreichim, which are muksa, as the Gemara discussed earlier in the Masechta. Tarnagol shebarcha. What if a chicken escaped? Doichin oisa, one may push it, achet tikanis, until it comes back home. Midadin agolin usyachim, one may go ahead and hold on and help the calves, the agolim are the calves, usyachim, the young donkeys. You can hold on to them, not lift them, but actually just hold on to them by their neck or by their sides and help them walk. Says the, continues the Mishnah, Isha medada is b'no. So one second, we're speaking about even something which is an animal, which is really mukta. So one cannot actually lift an animal on Shabbos, and bal chai is mukta, considered to be useless. We're speaking about cases where there's a hefzid moment involved. There's a potential property loss, where this tanagodesh ran away, these agolim v'siochim escaped. So you can go ahead and work out a way that they should come back. So by the time the goyilus, Mishnah tells us, he must push it. He can't actually hold on to it and have it walk in that manner. Whereas when it comes to that goyim v'siyachim, we're more lenient. Midaden, he can hold on to them and assist them and have them walk back home in that manner. So although he's actually moving mukta, the Chacham allowed it in the case of a hefzid moment. Continues the Mishnah. Likewise, Isha, midades b'no. A mother can go ahead and help her child walk. And the Gemara will tell us, even if it's just a ramek, she can do so. Oh, Rabbi Yehuda, Amosai, when is this allowed? Bizman shehu noitel achas. When he has the ability to lift one foot, or maneach achas, and he places one, meaning he walks. She's simply helping him walk. Avalim hoya goyrer, but if he's simply dragging his feet, then also she can't do that because she's actually carrying him, which is not allowed. Omer Rabbi Yehuda Marav, behema shenafel amasamayim. So an animal fell into a stream, a water trench. Maybe karim uksosis. So you can bring karim uksosis pillows, or karim usually means mattresses, uksosis pillows. So pillows, cushions, umeniach tachteah, and you can go ahead and place underneath it to assist it in its ascent, allow it to climb up. Also, if it climbed up, if it came out, then fine. So, but he can't actually physically lift the animal, which is muktzah. Maseve, we have a brisa which seems to tell us that is not allowed. Be'emesh nafla amasamayim, an animal which fell into the amasamayim, oisla parnasubim kaima. He needs to provide its provisions right there in its place, v'shvil shalaitamba, so it doesn't die, so you can place some food there. But that's it. Parnasa in, only its provisions. He can provide kar muksasa isloi. He can't do that. Says the Gemara, now why wouldn't he be able to do the karma exhaust? The Gemara is going to tell us because of a concern of Mavata Klimi Echanoi, as we'll see soon. So the Brisa seems to imply that only providing sustenance is allowed, but placing these utensils to allow the animal to climb out, that's not allowed. Says Maloi Kasha, it's not a Kasha. Ha, the Efshe Berparnasa. The Brisa, which insists on limiting the allowance here to Parnasa, is only when that's an option. Ha! But the halacha that we learned earlier, placing the karim uksasis to assist the animal in climbing out, is a case of the efshe b'parnasa, that there's no parnasa option at hand. Perhaps it's a deep pit and it's just not viable. So therefore, he may place the karim uksasis to facilitate its exit. Efshe b'parnasa in. V'loi, if efshe b'parnasa in. If one can go ahead, provide parnasa, fine, do that, v'loi, but otherwise maybe karmic sasais, he brings those karmic sasais, and places it underneath. Says the Gemara, how can you allow placing these utensils underneath the animal? He's negating the kli from its preparedness, meaning, when he places it under the animal, meaning he allows the animal to walk on it, what's happening is the kli right now is becoming nullified, it can't be used any longer, it's sitting under a muktzah. Rashi explains, it's an isadar abban, it looks like he's demolishing like soyser. So how can he do that? Answers the Gemara. Savar. The reason why he can do it is because he holds Mevata Kli Me'echanai. The Mandom, Rav Yehuda Marav, holds that the halacha Mevata Kli Me'echanai, nullifying a Kli from its designation, is merely the Rabbanon. So this is the Rabbanon. However, when he's coming to rescue his animal, he's actually addressing a more serious concern. Tzar Balachayim, Doi Raisa. Preventing distress from a creature. It's a biblical obligation. Rashi will give us the source. So since the consideration here is Tzar Balachayim, V'osi Doi Raisa, this biblical consideration, this Chiyuv of Tzar Balachayim, will come along V'dochid Rabbanon and negate, suspend the Yisad Rabbanon. That takes precedence. Therefore, one can place those Karim Uksosis to remove the Tzar, the stress of the animal, despite the fact that it involves a rabbinic concern. Let's take a look at Rashi, who is 14 lines from the top of the Amud, beginning with the words, V'akum avata kli me'echanai. So the Gemara asked, how can he place the karmic sauces? Isn't he being mevata the kli? The mishay nicham tachteo, ein yachal ataltlan. Once they're underneath, he can't any longer be metaltal those kelim. The doime, or vidoime, l'soyser binyam drabanan. It appears like he's demolishing a binyan, midrabban. He's taking a kli, which is perfectly functioning and useful, and he is terminating its use. That's considered to be like soiser midrabban, and that's awesome. Continue the Gemara, fine, that's one consideration. But on the other side, we have Tsar Balachayim, which is the Uraisa. Shenemar Ozev Tazav Imoy. Torah is instructing a person to go help his friend unload his animal. V'ikoman, the Dorish time of the crow. And there is a Manama who explains the reason is Mishum Tsar Balachayim, Be'elu Metzias. The reason is it's based on relieving the animal of its tsar, its stress. So that's a Yisra Menat Torah, it's a Chiv Menat Torah. Therefore, that takes precedence. Let's get back to the Gemara. Tarnagodes Shebarcha, the Mishnah said that one has a Tarnagodes who escaped, he can go ahead and push it back till it gets back home. Doichen in, he may push it, but medadin loy, medadin again means holding on to the sides and facilitating its walking, assisting it in the hiluch, that he can't do to a Tarnagodes, as opposed to the agolam visyachem, which the Mishnah says he can go ahead and be medada those animals. He can go ahead and help them walk. Says the Gemara, Tanina lohoda ton rabban. So our Mishnah actually conforms, parallels what we learned in the following brayso, medadan behema chaya v'oif b'chotzer. One may help the behema chaya o'oif in their walking if it's in a chotzer. Aval lo yisa tarnagoylis, but he cannot do so to a tarnagoylis. Says the Gemara, why? Why is a tarnagoylis an exception? Tarnagoylis my time aloy. Why do you only allow one to push it, but not to actually help it walk? Because a chicken has a tendency to lift itself off the floor, in which case we have a concern that he may go ahead and actually carry it, which is a mukta concern. He's been metaltal b'chai. So if he holds on to it and facilitates its walking, perhaps the animal, the tarnagoylis, will lift itself up in the air, and he will end up actually holding on to it, fully carrying it, which is mukta. Therefore, we only allow him to push him, in which case there's no concern. This is in contrast to the other animals, the calf, etc., who don't entail this phenomenon. Therefore, there's no concern. He may go ahead and hold them as they walk. Continues the Gemara Tani Chada. We have one brayso which says medadin behema v'chayvayv bechotzer. So may help the behema chayvayv walk in the chotzer. Avalei b'shusuram, but not b'shusuram. Out of concern that perhaps he might actually end up carrying them, in which case he's doing an Issa Menatur, carrying Shisram. So you can only do this in a Chatzar. But when it comes to a child, a mother can do Medada, can help the child walk, even in Shisram. Certainly, there's no need to say that in a Chatzar she can do so. Rashi explains because a person is different than an animal. If a person is carried on Shabbos, it's not really a malacha. We apply the concept of chayinu, he says atzmoy, the person lightens himself somewhat, it's not considered to be a malacha. So at worst case scenario, she'll carry him, although not allowed, but if she does it, she's not doing a malacha, therefore, she can be medadah b'nabish v'suravim, as opposed to the animals, where medadah v'suravim is not allowed. So this is one brayso. V'tani idach, we have another brayso which says, ein oikrin behema v'chayi v'if b'chotza, what may not actually lift, carry the behemo or the chayah, the oif, in the courtyard. So apparently lifting is not allowed, but being medada, holding onto them, supporting them as they walk, that's allowed. Then the brayso concludes, avo doichem bem sheikonsu. However, you can push them so that they come back in. Now, it would seem from here that merely pushing is allowed, but being medada is not. So we seem to have an inherent contradiction here. How good for kashya? Amras, first you say ein oikrin, you may not lift, avol deduyim medadinan, but that implies that helping them in their walking, holding on to them as they walk, is allowed. V'hadar amras, then you say doichin, in, pushing, yes, medadin loy, apparently medad is not allowed. Amra abayi seifa ason latarnagoylis, the brayso must be split into two. The first part, which allows medad, speaking about other animals, which is no concern there. He'll simply assist them as they walk, and he's fine. The Seifa, which we had an inference, a diuk, to the extent that you cannot be medade, speaking about a tarnagoylis, in which case is a concern, because it lifts itself, and in that case, the only thing that's allowed is pushing it, which does not entail this concern. Amar Abaye, based on this gemara, the tarnagoylis lifts itself, Haiman de shachat tarnagoylis, one who slaughters the tarnagoylis, lich beshinu lekaribara, he should press down, bend down its feet on the ground. Inami, alternatively, nedelu medel, he should lift them up, meaning not to allow the tarnagoles to position himself to gain support on the ground. Why? The dilma manachlu tufrei ba'ara, perhaps he'll embed his claws in the ground and support himself in that manner and lift himself va'akar lulu simanim. And by doing so, he will be oikir, will uproot his simanim. Simanim are the kana and the veshet, which require shechita. So those two simanim, the trachea, the windpipe, the esophagus. So if he's going to allow himself to be lifted, if you're going to allow him to support himself, perhaps he'll have free rein here, he'll move around, and the simanim will become uprooted, and the shechita will become invalidated. Okay, so in summary, we learned that pushing is allowed, whether to an animal, whether to a tanagoilis. What about medadin? So a behema of a chai and a chatzar is allowed. Regarding a katan, that's allowed even in shusarabim. Regarding a tanagoilis, one may not do so because the tanagoilis tends to lift itself, in which case is a concern of carrying muktzah. Continues the Mishnah, Eimi yaldin as a behema b'yamtiv. One may not go ahead and deliver the offspring of a behema on yamtiv. He may not pull out the fetus because it involves tircha. Aval Masadin, but he can be of assistance. The Gemara will explain exactly what Masadin, what assistance means. But certainly, an Isha, one may go ahead and deliver her baby on Shabbos. Likewise, he can go ahead and call a Chacham a midwife, even from a faraway place, even from out of the Tchum. Mechal unless a Shabbos. One may do Chilul Shabbos for the sake of this Isha who is giving birth. One may tie the umbilical cord, which is necessary for the well-being of the child. He may also cut it. All the tzrachim, the needs of the bris mila, can be done on Shabbos. So one may not deliver the animal, but he can go ahead and help out. How is that? It simply means that he holds on to the fetus as it's coming out, so it doesn't drop down on the floor. Rav Nachman Omer, he can even press the flesh, the womb of the animal, to manipulate, to induce the giving birth of the vlad. Tanya kavase dav Yuda, we have a brisa in support of Yuda. Ketzad mesadin, what is the example of mesadin uchsan savlad? Hold on to the vlad shel yipoil laretz. V'nefech lebechoytmai, he may go ahead and blow into its nostril to clear them. V'nosin ledad losech piv, this is speaking about an animal. And likewise, he can place the dad, the udder of the mother, into the mouth of the offspring, sheyinak, so that it nurses. If we were faced with a situation where the mother distanced, estranged herself from the offspring, we would try to evoke rachmanas and pity. On a kosher animal, it took place on yamtiv. How did they do that? Hechi avid. So what did he do? Amar Abaye, maybe bulshel melach, takes a fistful of salt or menech labaseich harechem and places it into the womb of the mother behema, because they should tizkur tzara, so that she recalls the pain of the childbirth of a terachem alav, and she will have pity on him. Somehow this evokes the feelings, the mercy of the mother. Umezalfin, likewise, they spritch the mei shilya, the juice of the placenta, al gabi vlad, on the offspring, they shetariach rechoy, so the mother discerns its scent, or shirachim olav, and she has pity on him. V'davka toira, this only applies to a kosher animal. Avol tmei aloi, but regarding a non-kosher animal, this may not be done. Why? My timer. Tmei aloi merach gavaldo. The tmei does not reject its vlad, vi merach, but if she does it, vi merach gavaldo, loi mekarva. If she rejects the vlad, Loi Makarva, she no longer re-accepts it. So there's no point, it's useless to go through this process. Continues the Gemara, Miyaldin as the Isha. So one may deliver the baby of an Isha. Michti, let's take a look. Tonalei, the Mishnah already said, Miyaldin as the Isha. Vikorin l'chachom makam makam, call the midwife. Mechalal as Shabbos, l'su yamai. What is the Mishnah adding by saying, you can go ahead and mechalal Shabbos on her behalf? What's missing here? What procedure was not yet mentioned? Says the Gemara Lasui, it's coming to include Ha the Tanur Rabbanan. What we learned in the following verse: Im Hoisa Tzrichel a Ner, if the Isha needs a Ner to be lit on Shabbos, Chaverta Madlekas Lasaner, her friend can light the candle for her. If she has a need for oil, her friend can go bring shemen even through Rishus HaRabim. But yet, she should bring it in her hands, which is derech shinoi. It's deviating from the ordinary way of bringing liquid, which is in a container. This way, she's avoiding the malacha veitzah. But if it's not sufficient, what she has in her hand is not sufficient, and she must bring a larger quantity, what does she do then? Then she has the oil absorbed into her hair, and she brings it, she transports it through Rishus HaRabim in that manner. But if oil in her hair would not be sufficient, what does she do? She simply brings a kli, a container with oil for the ish. Omar Ma, we just learned to Moisa Tzrichel Aner, if she needs a candlelit, Chaverta Madlekas Aner, her friend lights the Aner for her, Pshita, isn't that obvious? Why not? Why would you think otherwise? It's Pekuach Nefesh. Loi Tzricha must be speaking out Besuma, that the Isha is giving birth is actually blind. Mahu Detemer, perhaps I would think, Kibit Loi Chazia, since she has no ability to see, Aser, there's no reason to allow lighting a candle. Kamash Malan, the Bryce informs us, yes. Isuvi Miyaswadata, her mind becomes at ease when the candle is lit for her sake. Why? Suffer, she figures, Iika Midi. If there's something, there's a need which arises, Chazi Chaverta V'Avdili, my friend will see and will do it for me because the place is lit and everything is visible. So lighting a candle, even for a blind woman, is allowed because it adds to her presence of mind and is necessary for well-being. Continues the Gemara, Moshe Tzrich L'Shemen. So the Braisa told us that if the hand is not sufficient, so you have it absorbed into her hair. The point here is to spare yourself a malacha of haitzah. Says the Gemara, fine. You avoided the malacha of carrying Rishus HaRabim because you did a derech shina, you deviated. It's not the ordinary way of carrying. But there's another malacha which applies here. Taper glem shem schita. What about schita? There's going to be an issa schita when she squeezes the oil out of her hair. It's a malacha of mefarik of dash, extracting something from its encasement, like the grains from the husk. That's a malacha. So what do you gain? So you avoided one malacha, instead you did another. Rabbi, Rav Yosef, Damir Tavayu, they both explained, Ein schita beser. The concept of squeezing does not apply to here. Rashi explains, it's kosher, it's enibaleya, it's stiff, it's hard, it doesn't absorb a significant enough amount to be considered a malacha of schita. Rav Ashi, I feel tema ye schita beser, even if you say, schita will apply to ser. The Braisa didn't mean to have the oil absorbed in the hair. Rather, it meant like this, Mevia la bikli derech sara. She brings the oil in the container, but she ties it to her hair. So it's a derech shinui, the kama, the efshel shanui mishanin. As much as we can deviate, we're meant to deviate. So although she's being in a container, but since she ties it to her hair, it's considered to be a shinui, a deviation from the norm, and does not constitute the malacha v'etzom and atayra, and therefore this is preferred. Time for a brief review of today's daf. We began with a discussion of the various objects in our Mishnah, which can be moved on Shabbos, and the Gemara told us the chidushim involved, and the Gemara proceeded with animal feed, which one may move on Shabbos. So if this feed is meant for an exotic animal, which he actually is raising in his property, in his possession, he has it, it's mutter, because it's designated for this animal. If this animal is commonly raised, there as well, the animal feed is mutter. What if it's only something which b'nei melachim raise? Tanakama says that animal feed is asr. Rav Shimon Gamliel says it's mutter because he holds Kol Yisrael b'nei melachim heim. So a feed which is designated for ravens or for those the glass pieces for ostriches, they're mutter to be moved. Rav Nosson adds even elephant feed. We discussed those bundles of wood, of reeds, and the Gemara told us, well, it depends if it's designated for firewood, it's mukzah. For animal feed, it is not mukzah. The Gemara discussed different types of moilil, of rubbing, rolling those plants. We had Rabbi Yehuda Shita, Rabbana Shita. We proceeded with different types of meat regarding the basar v'hem v'chaya. If it's salted and technically edible for a person, it's mutter. If it's bland and inedible, according to Rafuna, he can move it because, technically speaking, it's still roi for an animal. Whereas Rav Chizah said, he cannot move it, it's mukta because it's not designated, it's not prepared for that purpose. If it's spoiled meat, then it's mutter because it's designated for a chaya. Regarding duck meat, which is raw and uncooked, that is mutter because it's soft and tender and edible for a person. Regarding fish, raw fish, so if it's salted, then it's perfectly edible and it's mutter. If it's unsalted, then it's asr. Bones are not mukta, and that water which was left exposed, is mutter as well, since a cat will drink it. The Gemara told us one may push the tarnagoilis back home, one may go ahead and handle the animals, help them walk from the chatzar. Regarding a katan, a woman may do that to a katan, even if she's a rabbin. Regarding a tarnagoilis, one may not handle tarnagoilis, concerned that since it has a tendency to lift itself, he may actually go out and lift the muktzah. We learned about delivering a baby on Shabbos, as opposed to the delivering of an offspring of an animal, which is not allowed. The Gemara told us that anything required for the Isha can be done on Shabbos or Mechal Shabbos. We prefer to do a derech shinu to avoid Malacha. The Mishnah told us that even Tzorchei Mila, anything needed for the Mila, may be done on Shabbos. And regarding a behema, although one may not deliver the offspring, but the Gemara told us, Mesadin, one may be of help and evoke mercy from the mother to the offspring.